local people, quick question. Have you ever thought to yourself, I've been passed up for a promotion, but I don't understand why? Or I want a change in my career, but where do I even begin? We know we're not the only ones that have had these questions, and that's why we started this podcast. It's called Gems for the Journey, and we hope that as you listen, you can discover some gems for your career journey. I'm Leah Murphy, and in my life, I wear many hats. I'll tell you about just three of them. I am an engineer by trade, a career coach, and entrepreneur, all while working hard to stay happily married and raise three beautiful children.
Ooh, that sounds like a lot of work, Leah. My name is Amma Gordon. I'm a brand marketer, entrepreneur, and serial passion pursuer with a business approach to my endeavors, but always with a creative spin. And we're two really great friends that have supported one another throughout our entire professional careers. I mean, we've been through it all, and we're here to share some authentic stories that include key successes and setbacks. You're not going to want to miss this.
Hello guys, this is Leah.
And this is Amma. And you are in for a pretty interesting subject matter for today's podcast. The title of today's podcast is called Political Capital versus Technical Skill, right? And a little emphasis on the versus, meaning should you have to pick one versus the other, right? And I'm not actually sure it's an either or. I believe when you're thinking about your track to leadership and as you ascend in leadership, it's actually both. So I would argue that the answer is both. I mean, one could argue that more political capital you have, the higher the likelihood you could excel with less technical skill. And therefore, political capital might be the key to advancing versus technical skill. But I would argue that great leaders have both. I mean, what do you think, Leah?
I think you caught me thinking about leaders that I have observed that do not have both and the results that they are not able to achieve. So I would say I agree with you 100% that great leaders are able to do both. It's the manner in which they're able to build both and what stage in their career and what their priorities are. So it does require you to be intentional about taking certain steps in order to build your technical depth or to focus on your political capital. But because those things are both absolutely necessary, in my opinion, for you to be competitive, period, it doesn't matter what you do for a living. This, and I know oftentimes when you say technical depth, people may think of something that is a tech that is based in technology or that is in STEM or math or science. No, any function that you work in, whether you are a marketer or whether you are a computer scientist, there is a technical depth and skill that's required in order for you to master your craft, right? So there's things that you need to learn. There are essential capabilities that you have to develop. So I just wanted to like dispel any of that myth, like, oh, well, I'm not in a technical career, so I don't need technical depth. No, the term is really.
I mean, I think of it as a skill set, right? So whatever that skill set could be, whether it's in a creative realm, right? So you could be a creative art
Photographer.
director, photographer, director, but it's still a specialty of skills that are required, almost a suite of techniques and learnings that you would have had to gather into this tool kit that you could call and put it together to apply it to something, right? And that essentially, in my mind, is what differentiates you from someone who is maybe new in the field or has little experience in the field, or if we're talking about corporate America, maybe transitioning, right, from one area to another. It's that depth of skill, in my opinion, that differentiates you, but falls under the realm of what we're considering to be technical skill as it relates to this conversation.
Yeah, I've just heard people say, like, I don't understand what it is you're referring to. So if we can't get people, as many examples as possible that help them understand, okay, this is my technical skill. You know, personally, this is my technical skill. Even in fashion design, right? And it's like understanding your angles, knowing lighting, knowing body shapes. That's a technical skill. So I just wanted to give people some examples that were a little bit traditional and a little bit non-traditional before we got all into the things.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, let's be honest though, right? I mean, there are plenty of brilliant people with are who are experts in specific skill sets. I mean, strong contributors to their company, to their
Totes.
team,
Yeah.
offer tremendous value who are not leaders. And I mean, they offer, it's almost like, you know, I've seen this where it's almost they offer a huge incentive to their leaders to almost keep them right where they are because they're so valuable.
So
I mean,
true.
how do you navigate around that,
So
right?
true. And I think we mentioned this in a previous podcast. So if you guys have an opportunity to go back and listen to earlier episodes, you have to give your employer an incentive. If you don't work for yourself, if you're not an entrepreneur, you have to give them an incentive to give you opportunities that are outside of what you're doing today. And what you hit on, Amma, was really a term that is really like well treaded, and is subject matter expert. If you are the subject matter expert or the SME in your field, and you are a key resource.
Wait. Did you just give it an acronym, the SME?
SME,
Yeah,
yeah.
you know what's funny? I've heard a subject matter expert, obviously, because I just used the term, but I have never heard it used as an acronym. If
Look
you're an
at you. I'm out
SME,
here
I
dropping
like that.
gems for you. SME.
Go ahead. Where
Yeah.
are
Where my SMEs at?
the
So if
SMEs at?
you are a subject matter expert, then people really rely on your expertise. And that could show up in a number of different ways. But oftentimes, what I try to encourage people to do as they are, thinking through these kind of variables and trying to make great choices for the work that they do and how they show up, it can be an absolute choice to become a subject matter expert. People who have strong technical depth and they don't have a desire to lead bigger teams, or they don't have the desire to take on like broader responsibilities. They like to be individual contributors. They like a particular type of work. They're very good at it. They're very well respected. A lot of people who are subject matter experts are brilliant, to Amma's point, and also not necessarily motivated to elevate outside of subject matter expertise. They just want to grow and get more depth, right? So they might want to spend more time and be staying on pace with whatever technology or advancements are happening in their specific field, but have very little or no interest in moving into other fields. And I think that is absolutely a choice. And we need people like that in all industries. Everyone can't be a leader, or else there's no one to lead. So as long as
Right.
you are developing technical depth that is of value to your organization and to your leader, you're a great asset to the team. So this is not a nod to, everybody has to want to be a manager.
Yeah. I mean, there's also the generalist as well, right? And if I speak a little bit to my own personal experience, especially in the role in which I'm in marketing, which is brand management. The whole idea is around being a generalist of in a sense, right? So you have specific skills in a broad range of areas because you are essentially leading such a wide cross-functional group, right? So you know, we're not expected to be a subject matter expert in research and development. Or in finance, or in the creative art space. However, it is a requirement in order to, you know, excel or be successful in the area to have a certain level of skills, right? A certain number of,
A
or
broad skill set.
yeah, you know, but not just knowing it, right? But being able to have, I guess, if I think about it in sort of a range, right? If it was a scale of 1 to 10, I would argue that we need to be somewhere in the middle range of most of those. And then there's a few that we need to be in the higher range. So if it's a scale of 1 to 10, we could be somewhere in a 5 or 6 across the board. But there are a few specific ones where we need to be anywhere between the 8, 9, 10 range. And but I mean, looking at this particular title or that particular role or function really does require you to be a generalist. So just because you're not an SME doesn't mean you can't be a G and still have the technical skills required to excel.
ABC element of P. Get all of the letters out.
Right.
So you mentioned a couple of things and I wanted to revisit them. So I think if you desire to lead teams at some point in your career, it's really important for you to become a master of some specific skill sets that are assets to your function or to your organization. So not that you need to develop subject matter expertise that is sustained and will be the main driver for your career, but early in your career, technical depth is really essential for people to value your opinion. For people to even invite you into the room, they're only inviting you because you have something of substance that is valuable to them, and that can only be demonstrated through consistent performance in a technical depth area that you have mastered or are on the path to mastering. So I think it's oftentimes like we're in a whole different era now where now people can be masters of YouTube video creation, right? And that's something that is an asset to organizations. If organizations are trying to learn more about how to bring on influencers or they're trying to learn more about their social platforms, being a master of YouTube video creation, content creation, social media is a real thing. So there were a lot of windows of time. Well, I would say in the past, in more traditional thinking, where it was a very narrow set of things that could be valuable assets to an organization, and they all had to be as a result of you going to college, getting a particular degree, or having 25 years experience doing something in order to be seen as valuable, or a subject matter expert in that space. But now, we have a lot more resources at our fingertips, and we have access to information in a way that we just never have before. So the key takeaway there is early in your career, before you have built any credibility, well before you can have any social capital, you do have to develop a certain level of technical depth in order to have value.
Yeah, and I mean, it puts you in a position of I would say competitiveness, no matter how early you are in your career. If it's a specific subject matter that is unique, right?
Exactly. Very
And
true.
if you are the only one, so you could be an entry level or new at a company, new in a particular role, but if you have a specific skill set that no one else on your team has, then it doesn't even matter if you're sort of new in your career or entry level, because of the value that you have. So you could still be in the room with a CEO, senior leadership, business owners, someone who's owned a company and run a successful business for many, many years, because you have something that they don't.
Can
So
I give
everyone
you a
can add
couple of
value.
examples?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, example number one, I spent a fair amount of time with very talented, skilled trades people. And skilled trades are people who are examples of some are mechanics, electricians, metal workers, glass blowers, steel workers, bricklayers, kind of the foundation for everything that we function and use in our society. Is often built or touched by skilled trades. And I led a team of skilled tradesmen, and I had eight people on my team, and none of them had a particular skill set in being a electrician. Talented mechanics, talented metal workers, really talented in the space of like drafting and designers, but no one who could really master and do full scale wiring of electrical systems. So we hired a guy who was an electrician, talented, young, maybe 20, 21, and you're dealing with a group of skilled tradesmen who are, far older, probably old enough to be his parent. But the minute he walked into the building, they acknowledged him because he had a true skill set that was of value to them that they couldn't bring to the table. So instantly, whatever he said, whatever he recommended, folks are saying, okay, fantastic. That sounds good. Let's go for it, right? He's 3 weeks into the company, but has some credibility because he was able to get his journeyman license. But because there were so many people who didn't have his skill set that were handicapped by not having that key asset to the team, him being young, him potentially not having a relationship with these people, all that was a lower priority and not a focus because he had this particular skill set that was unique. So that was one. The second example that I will offer for this is, and this is more of a corporate America example. There are a lot of new programs and softwares that companies will sell you, right? The companies will tell you it smooths out your processes. We'll be able to give you better reporting. You know, your CEO will be able to get content, you know, within moments. It might be dashboard based, right? There's a whole pitch that goes along with so many technologies. And I'm not a fan of salespeople, so forgive me if I don't sound excited when I'm talking about a sales pitch. Good salespeople I love because they're bright, right? They have technical depth on what they're selling, and they're actually trying to solve a problem for you, right? They're coming to you with solutions. But I digress. So they're trying to sell you these things, and you sell the software, but as you buy the software, you have to have a plan for who's going to use it. Who's going to be the master user? Who's going to be the one who trains other people on it? What's going to be our process to make sure that this investment that we make in this software or this program is one that continues to pay dividends? So now what you're doing as an organization is saying, okay, we have to identify some people who are going to develop technical depth in this area in order for us to really be able to leverage this software. And it could be something really complex or it could be something really simple. But at the end of the day, if no one knows how to use it, it's of no value to the organization. And the first person that can master it and troubleshoot and translate information in the system is going to be a real asset to the organization. So, again, as we think about building technical depth early in your career or early in your experience at that organization, bringing in a skill that is going to be an asset, it's really key. And it differentiates you, and it makes you a really valuable contributor to the organization.
I have a different perspective on how being the only one with a specific skill set can actually bring, I would say, a false sense of credibility as well. And this is, I guess we can put this as a third example. And this has happened in my experience, where someone was brought on to build a team that was completely new for the company. It was more focused in the realm of the digital space, right? So I don't think this is uncommon, especially within the past maybe 5 to 10 years for a lot of companies. So this particular person was brought on to lead a team within the digital space, but no one else in the company had this specific expertise. So as a result, there was no one, and excuse my language, to call bullshit on whatever this person was saying, right? So as a result, and this is so in my particular role, because it requires you to be a generalist and kind of be able to look at a big picture and pull things together and think strategically, even someone, who doesn't have that particular expertise, if you're a smart person, could start to question, this is not really adding up. I mean, I don't have this particular expertise, but there's something about this that just doesn't seem right,
Yeah,
right? How do we
that's
hold
good
this person
common sense.
accountable?
That's good common sense. And let's be
Right?
clear, there are vacuums where good common sense doesn't exist in business. I agree with you. I agree
Let's
with you
say that
totally.
again. Let's say that again sometimes, right? While there may be a plethora of technical skills, there could be
A
a lack
lack of good common sense.
of good common sense.
Yeah, it
And
can.
no one is there to call the bullshit because you're the only person offering this differentiated value that no one is a subject matter expert in.
Well, you're right. You've identified kind of the key risk to relying solely as an organization on one individual for anything. But for subject matter expertise in one thing or another is probably the one that comes up the most often. So you definitely need to have a plan, right, where broader understanding is designed in. Otherwise, then if you put all of this emphasis on this one individual, now the organization is also in the same way, whether you're like, great, they're here, fantastic, we're saved. It's like, okay, but they decide that they're going to leave. What do? We're back in the same spot. So, great organizations or organizations that have foresight are going to have layers of skill sets where you're going to have somebody who's at least tangentially informed enough to be able to say, that sounds crazy. You're going to have a third party consultant or another resource that can come in and help you understand your plan and, you know, spend some time with you to potentially execute it. But you're right that, you know, if your resume danced around and made it sound perfect and the organization decides they're our savior and we're all done, I would argue that you're in a more risky place as an organization for not knowing what you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know what you don't know until somebody else points it out.
Yeah. But I think calling bullshit is like the most complicated thing to do in a corporate environment, because the politics of it can just be dangerous, right? The politics of it are fragile. And sometimes calling bullshit is like, oh, great, you were the saying I like to say is the canary in the cave. You were the one that kind of recognized things were going south early and hipped us to it. Or you're the one who's difficult and a troublemaker and you just don't get it. You don't understand the vision. And that's why
Yeah.
you can't get on board with it. So it really
Yeah.
depends.
This was Leah Murphy and Amma Gordon. Thank you so much for listening. We hope this episode gave you some real gems that you can use on your own career journey. Come back for the next episode and be sure to follow us on social at Gems for the Journey on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you can also email us at info@gemsforthejourney.org. That's info at gemsforthejourney.org. And let us know if you have any comments or questions.